Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Good day, everyone.
Good day.
Good day. Good day, blokes, mates. Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. We have another fresh audio candy for your ear holes today. Earlobes.
I just think the intro is getting more awkward every time, guys.
We should be getting better at this, not worse.
No, I don't.
Yeah, it's getting worse and worse.
That's Ben Hardman's voice. He's the
voice of reason.
The voice of reason.
The critical voice from Atlanta.
Yeah, he's the pastor in the Sun Belt. Ben Sternke's with me as well.
I'm here.
I'm Matt Tebbe, and today we're joined by our friend and collaborator, co-conspirator, inventor of Bitcoin, Josh Schuller. Josh, did I get all that right?
Yes. Me, Al Gore invented the internet, and I invented Bitcoin.
I hear your little startup's doing pretty well. No, Josh, why don't you give us an introduction, who you are, what you do, and then we can set up our conversation today.
Okay. Well, I would start with like how I even know who you guys are.
Yeah, let's do
that.
Good
call.
Is that, so Andy Knopfmeyer, who's my high school best friend, is part of your church.
Yes.
The Table.
The Table in Indianapolis.
In Indy.
Yep.
And I had not talked to Andy for a while. Like, you know, like you do, right? After high school, you kind of know where people are. And this is actually a positive Facebook story.
Ooh.
I reconnected to Andy on Facebook, and we just have been talking over the last couple of years, and he was telling me about these crazy guys who are trying to think about church differently. And I mean, and everybody says they're trying to think about church differently. So there's some inherent skepticism in that. But the more I saw how he showed up and the kind of things that he talked about, I was like, no, actually there actually is maybe something different here. And that connected me to you guys to want to know more about what you're doing. And now I've drunk the Kool-Aid, like I'm all about it.
Dude, that is amazing.
It is. That's a really encouraging story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the fruit comes from people you're investing in, like that's really encouraging.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and if you don't have those stories, then you're not making a dent.
Right.
It's just in your head and it's all theory. And so there has to be result.
Yes. Just, great.
Yes. That's part of what I like about Josh.
He's all about results.
Yeah, well, just those statements. Like, well, hey, you're not making a dent if it's not really happening. It's not really happening. Let's talk about it.
It's just aspirational and
yeah.
If it's just a Jay Biebs T-shirt and a rock song,
right? Yeah,
right.
That's part of what I appreciate about you, Josh.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, man.
So, Josh, where do you live? What do you do? What do you spend most of your time doing?
So, I'm in Northern Colorado in Fort Collins, which has consistently been ranked as like one of the top 10 places in the United States to live, which has made our housing prices just ridiculous. And so you know how people like they are asked that question, like, what do you do? And it's always a challenge to say what it is that you do.
Hmm. Yes.
For a lot of people. And I want to say that I have more challenge around that than most, because the context that I'm in are foreign to a lot of people. And so that's an inherent challenge. The easiest way that I can describe it is that I spend a lot of time around money and trying to use money to find more money to be able to do things that lead to lasting long-term value. So how that is in different contexts. So the context that I know you guys in is that I work with a company called New Fire Giving, and we are trying to counter what we call the church giving epidemic, which we can talk more about. Like there's a 30-year-old recession in funding churches. So, you know, if you're listening to this and you're a pastor and you're like, man, I'm like the ministry supply is always not meeting the ministry demand. That's not just you, maybe. It could be a broader thing that's going on and has been going on for 30 years that you don't even know about. So we do a lot of that stuff, trying to help churches in that. And then I spend most days, you guys can't see it, but I'm looking at screens and squiggly lines of futures markets. So futures are a tradable instrument. So like you may have heard people say, I bought this stock, mm-hmm. you know, I bought Apple at $100 a share and I sold it, So similar thing, it's just a different type of product that allows you to express an opinion on basically the world economy. So I can trade weather. It's really bizarre.
that is bizarre.
And then which leads me into lots of interesting conversations about gambling. Because everybody, like when I talk to people, they like, oh, well, you just gamble. And we get to have really robust conversations about how all of life is a gamble. And you're just uncomfortable with what I do because the cycle of risk is tighter than what you're used to experiencing.
Yeah.
And then the last thing that I do is an organization called Agora, which we help companies buy other companies, and we help owners of companies who have built value over their long period of time, help them gain value for themselves as they're exiting that, but like leave the value of what they created in place.
Yeah.
So that is a fascinating place because you may have heard of like mergers and acquisitions and companies buying companies, and 70% of mergers and acquisitions fail to return to the buyer the value intended. So when people are like, yeah, this company bought us, and then they just they shelled everybody out of it, or the company went downhill after we merged, that's a pretty consistent story. And so we're trying to all of these endeavors are from a Christocentric ethos, and which people get that on the church giving stuff, but when I talk about buying companies and selling companies, and we talk about futures markets, like that's a harder thing for people to understand.
Yes.
Because they're just like, well, it's just carnal, and you're sinful, and you're what's wrong with the world.
You're sleeping with mammon.
It's it's easy for me to understand, Josh, because I play fantasy football, so it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always a gamble.
Almost exactly.
So Josh, what you're saying you're doing basically you did invent Bitcoin. That's what you're saying.
I was looking at. I'll send you a chart of Bitcoin.
Of course you will.
Well, one part of the futures thing is I also teach people who want to learn how to trade futures. I don't think we've disclosed this yet, but I used to be a pastor. A pastor in the vocational sense, in that I was employed by a church and got my paycheck from a 501c3 registered church. I still pastor, but where I'm pastoring now is somebody says, hey, I shorted natural gas and it moved three handles, and now I'm down $15,000. What do I do? And so I spend lots of time with all these wonderful people who have come to markets for all kinds of reasons. And I really spend time pastoring them and supporting them and encouraging them. And life ran them over. Only in this case, it was the market that ran them over. And they're trying to find their way.
So I'd love to talk a little bit more specifically about giving generosity in the church and kind of how, some of the stuff that you're seeing. You mentioned that we're in this downward trend, and some of our listeners are pastors, and so they feel that in a certain way, right? Where they're like, man, this isn't as easy as it used to be. I'm trying to fund this work, trying to feed my kids sometimes, like all of those kinds of things. But I think also a lot of our listeners are not pastors. There are people who kind of see this from the other side of, it's kind of a trope or a cliche that like pastors are always looking for money, and we're always, talking about money, and we're always, trying to get people to give money to the church, that kind of thing. So the church and money have this interestingly sort of tense relationship. And especially now, because the trends are declining giving, across, how many years did you say? It's like
30
years. So this is, it's like, this isn't a temporary dip. This isn't like, oh, 2008 happened and now we're back to normal. No, this is like something that's been going on for a long time. So I'd love to hear, like, what are you learning about the church's relationship to money and how we can start to think differently about that in the church, both as leaders in the church who are responsible to raise budgets and stuff, but also like people who, you know, they're just coming to church and they're trying to figure out like how does my money interact with my faith? How does that work?
Yeah. And so that's a great question. It's related to this whole idea of trends and what we do with that is, so in the last week, I have been called a harlot, one without God, a prophet of Baal. Oh. What is wrong with the church in America? And
you are what is wrong with the church in America?
I personally am what is wrong with the church in America.
I've been trying to figure it out. Now I know.
Josh, listen, Josh, I have days with my kids like that too. They say really awful stuff, and you just have to not take it.
So people have said this about you because of your work in the markets and stuff?
No, actually because of my work trying to help the church.
With New Fire Giving?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's because we see very clearly these trends and we go, guys, so if the practices of the church to fund itself have largely been unchanged for decades. Mm-hmm. At the same time that the results are worse and worse and worse and worse.
So you're just out there pointing this out to people.
So we're pointing this out and we're saying, okay, so maybe the paradigms and practices and the way that the language that we use needs some reexamination.
Mm.
You know, is that possible? Because like, just for example, in the last 30 years, the amount of giving going to church, so charitable giving in the United States, by the way, charitable giving in the United States is at an all-time high.
Hmm.
No, there's never been a time in the United States history where more people have given charitably.
Like percentage-wise or just total number?
Total number.
Okay.
Now that's a good question because you're talking about percentage-wise. So percentage of charitable giving has been pegged at about 2% of GDP for about 50 years,
mm-hmm.
which that's pretty low. But as GDP, the gross domestic product of the country has increased, and we could have a fantastic conversation about what GDP measures. That's not helpful, but because it measures nuclear bombs, but it doesn't measure marriages.
Yeah.
But that's because that's grown. So
the hashtag America.
Hashtag America.
Wow. Okay.
So that total dollar figure has gotten higher.
Yes.
In 1990, 67% of that went to churches.
Okay.
Today, 32% of that goes to churches.
Wow.
Dude.
Wow.
Say that again.
In 1990, 67% of charitable giving went to churches. Today, 32% does.
That's like 28 years. That's a huge decline
in percentage. And there are 55,000 more churches.
Okay.
My bad.
We're one of those.
So 55,000 more churches are getting
more churches than in 1990 getting
half 100 as much.
A third.
$120 billion less to play with every year.
$120 billion less in 28 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're such a heretic.
Prophet of Baal.
Well, here's where the heresy is. So I say, okay, you talk about tithing and giving, you should stop talking about them as being the same thing. They're not.
Hmm.
All right, and church, say more about that.
So churches use, so that the for those who have been lucky to never been encountered to this idea, so there's this notion of something called a tithe,
mm-hmm.
which we find in the scripture, which denotes the giving of resources out of response if something happened. So the first place we see this is Abram after he's at war,
mm-hmm.
Encounters this character called the Melchizedek.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives this guy a tenth, or basically 10% of the spoils of war, whatever that is. This is the first place this is said. And then in the Levitical law, they talk about the idea of these tithes that are given, these tenths that are given.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they fund the operation of the temple. Sometimes they fund an ancient version of Social Security. Sometimes they actually set aside money for immigration,
mm-hmm.
right? And then there's these passages, like there's a passage in Malachi where the people of God are like thrown under the bus because they didn't tithe. And they're like, why don't you trust God? You should tithe. So all of that's like the ancient narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And then today churches will talk about this practice of, portioning a portion of what your income is to give to the church.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
This is problematic. So if you look at like rabbinical midrashes talking about tithing, so if you look in the Jewish tradition, when they talk about tithing,
as you do,
the etymology of the tithe has to do with the fact that you have 10 fingers. So it's an incredible practice and recognition of the product of the work of my hands.
Hmm.
And it's an ever-present recognition of the blessings around that, the responsibility of that. And a recognition that there's greater needs beyond what I need.
Mm-hmm.
It out of the work that I do. So there's, we can have a fantastic conversation about how wonderful tithing is as a practice of faith to connect ourselves to the work of our hands.
I think I figured out why you're being called a prophet of Baal. If you're telling churches in order to be biblical, they have to set aside 10% of their income to support immigration. That can get you in trouble in the current climate, Josh.
You would think.
Yeah. Anyway,
so there's that, and then today we have churches. Now there's some mental gymnastics you guys know that churches do between the first century origination of the church and local assemblies today that are registered with the government as 501c3 nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's a different beast.
It's a different beast, and they've got all the language to say how they're the same thing,
mm-hmm.
And while I would argue there's nothing prohibiting the establishment of these things, we have great liberality around that to do that. There's nothing prohibiting it. It's a fun way to express. It isn't always the most helpful, and everything that we talk about isn't one to one. So when you take tithing, they look at these practices of the tithe, specifically the Levitical tithe, which is one that was given to the Levites, who were the tribe in charge of running the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And they use this as if you're a follower of Jesus, you should tithe and give to the church. So this is an act of maturation. It's a way that you support our work. And they'll use language like, we give because, out of response of what God has given. But there's always this like wink and a nudge that we give to this organization.
Oh, yeah.
So the tithe means we give to this organization. So there's some philosophical problems with this. One is that the church is post-temple.
Mm-hmm.
So as Christians, we are to embrace, I believe, a post-temple way of viewing the world. Like the veil was torn in the temple when Jesus was crucified.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So what does that mean for my money?
Yeah. So it's a post-temple ideology. So trying to say that tithing to a church are connected and necessary, I think is you got some serious theological problems and philosophical problems there.
Yeah. So there's no problem like tithing as a practice of a disciple for me to set aside a percentage of my income. And
yes.
For that to be 10%. That is actually a wonderful practice, a beautiful thing that connects me to the needs of others, that makes me realize that the Lord has given me the ability to work, the work of my hands is not just my own stuff. Like I'm reliant on others and others are reliant on me. And so that's a beautiful practice.
Beautiful practice.
Try to draw a straight line from that 10% needs to go to whatever local 501c3 organization that you attend most often.
Yep.
Is not necessarily a helpful obligation to lay on people. Is that what you're saying?
Yep. That's right.
Josh, if you're going to take away guilt as the main lever I use as a pastor to make sure that my salary gets paid.
Yeah.
Right?
That's why you're getting called a heretic.
That's what I'm
getting
called.
Yeah, I mean
that's what I'm called. So what I'm doing is I'm taking away I'm trying to disassociate giving to the church to this practice of tithing, this obligation of tithing. I mean Jesus confronts somebody around tithing. Like the only time that Jesus talks about tithing, and he talks about tithing in relation to justice, right? In Luke, and he says, "Okay, I wish you tithe, but you forsake justice. I wish that you had not forsaken justice as you tithe." And you can, mm-hmm. I think, it's not a stretch to say that if Jesus had to pick between the two, he would pick justice.
Yeah.
than tithing. But, you know, and then Paul doesn't ever talk about tithing. Paul talks about giving.
Yes.
Right? And he talks about giving in relation and response to the need. And in Galatians, he talks about this, you know, we carry our load and we take care of the burdens of others. Like there's personal responsibility at play so that we are not a burden to others. In fact, we have margin to carry the burdens of others.
Yes.
Those are better arguments for funding a church than the tithe.
Yeah.
And I find churches that use Malachi 3:10 as a reason to fund their church, which by the way, nobody talked about Malachi 3:10 as a reason to fund the church before Oral Roberts in the 60s.
I didn't know that.
Can you remind us what Malachi 3:10? I mean, most of our listeners have the Old Testament memorized, but a few people that don't.
So the Josh Shuler paraphrase is don't rob from God by forsaking to tithe, and that you should tithe. This is one thing that you could test God in and see that he will be faithful to you if you tithe.
Yes.
There's a couple things in how it's interpreted that are really troubling. Is one, it's like, okay, do this to manipulate the result that you want out of God by doing this practice.
Yep.
And then the pastors will use it as a charge against someone as this is a thing that you're doing wrong and you're robbing from God.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes.
Right? Like,
take all my money, Josh.
Oh my gosh. This is the stuff that it's really scary. So, you know, what I'm saying is, okay, guys, this is the language and these are the paradigms we've been using for the last 50 years while the results are getting worse and worse and worse.
So we've been running Oral Roberts' playbook and it's not working.
It's not working.
Yeah.
Maybe we should get a different playbook.
And it was damaging to begin with. Right? Like the poor fear, exegesis, guilt,
well,
shame.
I want to be fair to Oral Roberts. I mean, I think Oral Roberts was
and the
work and the intent where he was, I think there was some, just like anybody, there's stuff that we can go, oh man, that was kind of yucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like when he said, you know, if people don't give me $1 million by this date, God's going to take me home.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
not helpful.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's,
but he was fun at barbecues. And
he had a good joke.
He threw some really good pool parties.
I think he did what we all do around this ancient faith is that we try to find language that can reconnect people in new ways. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was successful at that. But the thing about that is because it was a new way, over time it doesn't have the intent that it originally had, and the result is diminished. And so at that point we go, hey, we need a new language.
So
it's truncated. Right, just like what we do with the gospel in so many different ways, and it's no wonder that giving is declining at the rate that it's declining at, when the ask is not the correct ask.
Right,
right.
And we're not offering people a beautiful picture of what it actually does look like for us to give, and what it does look like for a community of faith to unite around that community and give and serve and bless and sacrifice. Mm-hmm. We're giving them rules and regulations and restrictions.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which would be old paradigm stuff, right?
Oh, it's old paradigm stuff.
I got in trouble for this. My wife and I had a couple come over to our church, and they were kind of grilling us about our church. And
friendly grilling.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was.
It was like, what do you guys think about this, and what do you guys think about that?
We were grilling, and we were talking.
Oh, grilling. Okay, all right.
Well, we were
grilling meats.
Yeah, I grilled some meats.
Okay,
and then we were talking about this, and she actually brought this up, Josh. What do you think about the tithe? Like, what do you guys, whatever? And I kind of went on this tithe rant, very similar to yours, and I just said we don't demand anybody tithe, and I tried to propose this whatever. And my wife, who's the treasurer of our church, she's like glaring at me as I'm talking. And then later that night, she's like, you realize what you just did. They've been coming to our church for 2 months. They've been giving the most money of anybody in our church. And what you just did was she heard you say you don't have to give money to the church. And I was like, no. Guess what? 6 months, they didn't give any money to the church. 6 months. Until I actually had to go back and say,
Yeah.
Remember that conversation on my back porch? Yeah. Here's what I didn't intend to communicate.
Yeah.
Right? So Josh, I guess what I'm saying is, like, this is a tricky thing.
So you went back in Oral Roberts' turn.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we either legislate a tithe. You know, one of my ideas is just to read the story of Ananias and Sapphira every week and then pass around the plate and just see what, just see what the Holy Spirit stirs in your heart.
That's another one. I tell people don't pass a plate anymore.
Yeah. Say more about that.
So okay, I mean, this isn't just about, this is how conversations about money can lead us to conversations about lots of other things in life, is that most people have a very narrow historical window of perspective. Mm-hmm. So they look at the practices that we do in faith now, and they make assumptions that that's how we always did it.
Right.
And there's all kinds of things that the American church, our way of expression, especially in the evangelical stream, that did not exist prior to the Civil War. Hmm. And one of those is passing a plate. This practice of passing a plate. So up until about 1836, just about every church in the United States was funded by the U.S. government. Like, your taxes paid for churches.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
That is amazing.
You think that wouldn't be the case because of the Establishment Clause in the Constitution, right, that says that we should not, you know, the free exercise of religion. Yeah, yeah. But the difference was, it was the establishment of a national church. Because remember, they're coming from England, where right. they're the Church of England,
the Anglican Church.
They don't want the Church of America, but they're totally cool
with churches,
with local parishes. Yeah,
they were Congregationalists, not they didn't want right. bishops.
Puritans.
We don't want
right.
Presbyterians.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. But then, you know, about the 1830s, people start to have, you know, they go, well, maybe this should include local churches too. And this is actually one of the things that it's a small part, but it's part of what is fueling us leading towards civil war. And so they remove this clause. They remove this practice. And so churches
have to find.
Government
stops funding churches.
Government stops funding churches. So they have to start finding different ways to fund themselves. And they try all kinds of things. some of them still exist today. The purchasing of pews.
Yeah.
Right.
And you placing your name, yeah. You get your name on the pew, right? Uh-huh. Like, some churches still do this today. Like, they'll want to buy a building and they'll want everybody buy a chair and then you put your name on the chair, right?
Right.
Or, you know, somebody buys a building, they put their name on the building. All right. So you just hear these practices and you go, okay, while I see that that's a creative way to raise funds, there's some, down the road, there could be some problems with this mm-hmm. around status and mm-hmm. hierarchy that are antithetical to those, the position of others above, you know, or taking a second position. So then we get through Civil War and stuff like that. And then other things they start doing were like pledge books. So annually, a local congregation would have a book, almost like the Book of Life, that was in the back of the wherever they gathered, that had what everyone pledged they would give for the year.
Kind of publicly seen.
You could see this book and you could see, it's like an open ledger of what someone had pledged, and which, you know, again, that can be effective and also be really, problematic. And then they start passing a plate to collect because they need funds. Hmm. So they're like, you know, they're actually connecting to this, you know, 2 Corinthians, like, if anybody has need. Mm-hmm. And so they're passing a plate to say, we have need.
Yeah. We're shaking people down right here.
Mm-hmm. Right here, right? And you know, it's while we're together, it's right here. So they're doing these things, but it's not, they're all practices out of response to the need of what we're trying to do, that then decades and a century later become ingrained into our paradigm.
Right. Now it's just what we do, and we're not really sure why.
Yeah. And then we reverse engineer. Yes. All of the theology around why that should have been the paradigm the whole time, instead of going, actually, you know what? We didn't do that. Mm-hmm. And so because we didn't do that, it doesn't mean that we don't have to keep doing that if it's not working.
So so this could be the problem of the church summed up in like one sentence. Contextualized innovation to meet a timely need becomes institutionalized and crystallized as a timeless practice. And then we look for rationale or reason for why God commanded it.
Yes.
Yes. So scarcity theology leads to bad methodology. That's what it is. So we don't have the methods to reach to speak to the abundance of what the Father has. And so our theology, which is actually bad theology, actually leads us to bad methodology, which is practice. And then it just becomes common practice and it becomes the liturgy of what we do week after week.
That's right.
Hmm. Yeah, that's the tradition. I mean, you know, being a Protestant, we pride ourselves on protesting tradition, but we really have traditions. We don't even, assumptions that we don't even look at, reckon with, ask questions about, right?
Yeah.
So Josh, can you, in the little time we have left, Yeah. Like, what should we do?
So obviously the data is not great for churches, but
doesn't look good, guys.
It doesn't look good. But here are some practices or questions that you could ask. And this is whether you're a pastor or if you're part of a church and you're like, I want to help them do their work and mm-hmm. talk about it in a way that gets a better theology, which leads to better practice. Mm-hmm. Hardman, that was, I'm glad we're recording this because I'm going to like tattoo that later.
Mm. Neck tattoo.
On your body?
Yeah, neck. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, face tattoo.
So one of the things that's really interesting when you look at, and like the Lilly Foundation in Indianapolis, they look at philanthropic giving. Mm-hmm. They're a big contributor to this. So they look at the trends of where stuff is. What they notice is that impact giving is on the rise. Like interest in giving towards organizations that are making a distinct impact in people's lives are that's where the giving dollars is going. One of the fastest growing nonprofits in the United States is a group called Charity Water, which I'm sure some of you know listeners know about. Here's the competitive challenge that the church is facing in funding their mission. So I can go give money to Charity Water, who can then put a well of drinking water in a community that the next day will reduce the infant mortality rate by 50%. Mm-hmm. Okay, can you articulate that kind of impact from giving to your church? Hmm. Now, I look at church websites all the time, and I would say like the first thing that I noticed is there is very little, there's all language around like showing how do you go up on Sunday and here's the places that we meet, but there is almost never language on here's the dent that we are making. Mm-hmm. So you have to start thinking like the person who's going to give, not from the paradigm of the person who is trying to get people to give.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to think like if you go out to dinner with your family, like you know a good experience eating out and you know a bad one, mm-hmm. right? From the buyer's perspective. So you have to think like a buyer's perspective. The giver is the buyer. Mm-hmm. And you can use market language because you're a 501c3, you're a organization. Mm-hmm. In a sense, you're having to market the story of here's what we're doing, and you're trying to attract buyers to support that work. So if people are not supporting it, it's because they don't believe in it.
Yeah.
Right. Here's a little story about this, Josh. My neighbor recently told me, he goes, are you still worshiping in your church? Are you guys still meeting every Sunday? I said, yeah. And he had told me about a year ago that he had started going to this large new startup church, like a multi-million dollar building, seating for, 1,000 people. They've already got 3 services. And he's like, yeah, we stopped going there about 3 months ago. And I said, why? He said, well, this guy's always super like kind and nice, but he got physically agitated. And he told me, he said, well, they got up on stage and they told us that they had done some poor projections financially and they weren't meeting their budget and they mm-hmm. needed us to give more in order to fulfill all the things that they wanted to do this year. And he was really upset that they were offloading their financial mismanagement onto the congregation and asking them to fix it for them.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which is a scarcity mentality, right? They weren't mm-hmm. talking about, here's all the good we're doing. Here's how you can partner with us financially. They were saying, hey, we need more of your money to make our church continue to work.
Right.
Or just to pay the bills. And he left and he won't go back.
Hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the work for the church is to articulate, here's the unique contribution that we are making for the kingdom, mm-hmm. and here are stories of where that's happening. And if you resonate with these types, you want to see more of these stories, this is a reason to support the work that we're doing.
Yeah.
Like get rid of the language that says, especially if you have like a in-service talk that's talking about, giving.
Right.
That's really what it is. It's here's the time when we're going to receive your payment. Right? Mm-hmm. This is one of the things contributing why the non-group of affiliation of religion is growing is because mm-hmm. people are like, oh, this is just like, just be, have some intellectual integrity to say, mm-hmm. Hey, this is the work that we're trying to do.
Yeah.
These are the types of stories. If that resonates with you and you want to be part of supporting that work, we would love to have you partner with us.
Yeah.
Just say it like that. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to talk about tithing in a different context, as talk about it in the same breath as fasting, and talk about it at the same time, right, breath of solitude, right, and liturgy and worship and service. Like, talk it, yeah, in those contexts. Mm-hmm. Don't have a 30-day tithe challenge.
Mm. Yeah,
you know, which I see these, like, you know, 30 days of, you know, tithing, which it's a it's, again, it's always like 30 days of tithing to the church,
mm-hmm,
which, you know, that practice is not supposed to be just for the church. Even in the law, there were tithes, yeah, outside of, yeah, that. So articulating the impact that you're making,
mm-hmm,
doing work there, that's the place to focus.
Yeah.
I also wonder, Josh, if part of our work is to build back trust, for people to understand that when they give to the church, the dollars are actually going to something that makes a dent in the community. That, yeah, it's not going for us to build bigger buildings or buy a new laser light or get the worship pastor some more skinny jeans.
Yeah.
Like it's actually going to something that does make a difference. And yeah, as I speak to people, I just get a sense that that one of the reasons maybe that number is declining and people are choosing to give to other organizations is because they've lost trust that the church is actually doing the work that the church is called to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The transparency, it's good that you said that. Transparency is key. The scrutiny on the churches is connected to the fact that the impact is unclear. So, right, you tell me Charity Water doesn't have admin expenses. Right. You tell me that World Vision doesn't have, no, but nobody asks those questions.
Right.
Why?
Because the impact is clear.
The impact is clear. So the scrutiny comes that, you know, where people go, well, why are you mismanaging this? Why are you doing this? It's because we don't really know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, so so the trust is like when we talk about the impact and here's the transparency. Mm-hmm. Oh man. I mean, we don't have enough time. I can tell you stories of churches that are killing it from a funding perspective, that are operating within this paradigm. From a principle standpoint, like I want to stay outside of formulas, but from a principle standpoint,
yeah.
I mean, they're countering the trends. I know a church in Wisconsin that went through a senior pastor transition, and the national stats are that when you go through a senior pastor transition from a founding pastor, you're going to lose about 20% top line revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw an 11% bump through a 3-year long transition.
Hmm.
And they never talk about money.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, so what's going on there?
Yeah, what'd they do? How'd they do it?
I'm not going to tell you.
No!
That's funny. Yeah, so...
I have an idea. Here's my proposal, how they did it.
Uh-huh.
They put a huge poster board on their platform with a thermometer.
Oh, yeah.
That had, like, mm-hmm, it was really low, and then they had, like, they colored it in every week for people to give. Is that what they did?
That's what they did.
Yep. Thanks, Josh.
It's all about the thermometers.
All about the thermometer. Yeah, this is good. And I think part of this conversation is, you know, one of these, it's a fact of life for churches, that, you know, it's a fact of life for everybody, right? We all need money to kind of navigate the world today because, yeah, of the way that we've set up our society. And I think this has been a helpful conversation in terms of how do we, you know, inside this new paradigm of what it means to be the church, what it means to live and lead like Jesus, how does that transform then how we think and talk about money, you know, inside the church and as it relates to the church, as it relates to our own personal practices? It's been really helpful. Mm-hmm. So thanks, bro.
Hey, guys.
Appreciate you being with us.
We love you, Josh.
Thanks,
man. Yeah, man. Enjoy Fort Collins.
Likewise. When y'all going to come out?
I don't know. But I'd love to. I know people in Colorado.
We have to figure out a way to communicate to our church that there would be good impact if we visited Fort Collins.
If we visited Fort Collins, fund our trip to Fort Collins.
All right.
Yeah. All right.
Peace.
See you guys.
See you guys. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you found it helpful, please let us know by leaving a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you do that kind of thing. And you can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com to ask a question or suggest a topic for a future episode. And join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. during the week. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And FYI, my brother, Aaron Sternke, mixes and masters this podcast. And he does this kind of thing, mixing, engineering, production, and scoring for other people. And he's really good at what he does. If you want to check out his work and request a quote, you can check him out at aaronsternke.com. That's A-A-R-O-N-S-T-E-R-N-K-E.com. We'll see you next time. Bye.